tuned in to a mental radio? Had I not heard this story, in essence, from a half dozen other survivors of this kind of mind control, I would have not included it here. But we videotaped a number of credible people talking about these voices in their heads. People who experienced this are what Martin Cannon referred to in his book, The Controllers, as wavies, Cannon wrote. Every senator and congressional representative has a wavy file. So do many state representatives. Wavies have even pled their case to private institutions such as the Christic Institute. And who are the wavies? They claim to be the victims of clandestine bombardment with non-ionizing radiation, or microwaves. They report sudden changes in psychological states, alteration of sleep patterns, intracerebral voices, and other sounds, and physiological effects. Most people never realize how many wavies there are in this country. I spoke to a number of wavies myself. I don't like the term wavy. It's a hard-hearted term which does not show any sympathy for the people who are suffering this way. They're suffering just as much as the people who have survived the so-called Project Monarch. I think I'll term them EM targets. EM for electromagnetic spectrum, since the technical possibilities exist that they are experiencing bombardment by ELF, VLF, SHF microwaves, magnetic waves, and other radiations of the electromagnetic spectrum, which can be modulated so that voices can be heard inside the head without implants and without speakers. And of course, this is the hardest thing for public agencies to believe, since HER2-4. If you report voices in your head, you get automatically diagnosed as schizophrenic, a catch-all term of the past. I must admit that when I listened to Mary, the first EM target I met in 1980, I had a hard time taking her seriously. The biggest secrets are kept by public incredulity. But then I heard another and another, and now the EM targets would appear to outnumber the other types of mind control survivors. One man on the East Coast is still pursuing his case, even though the Supreme Court has repeatedly turned it down as a nuisance suit. Another man who claims to be a victim of microwave mind control technologies is one of the best researchers and lecturers around. A woman on the West Coast was driven to near death by the voice. Another woman functions very well, but with great difficulty, suffering holographic hallucinations, flashing lights at night, and continual voices in her head. Many of these survivors keep in touch with each other through the Freedom of Thought Foundation and through posting on that mind control list hosted by Wes Thomas. Weekly, I read mail from another new person saying basically the same thing. One of the survivors sent me a self-published book written by Dorothy Burdick titled Now It Can Be Told. Burdick's is one of the first books describing the modern phenomena. It's a good example of what EM-targeted survivors have been describing for the past 20 years. In the beginning, I only had to deal with two voices at a time, Dorothy Burdick said. Out back, when I was writing, it seemed that one voice was using a receive machine and that other was projecting to me and watching me at the same time. They were probably trying to make me think that the gadgets involved were simple. My sleep at night was constantly inhabited by voices. I had difficulty sleeping. I kept trying to imagine what it was or anybody could possibly want with me. I trying to hang on to the idea that I was really alive, comparatively well, and above all, sane. I was well aware that I might be certifiably insane. I read in the paper about a voluntary university group who got admitted to well-known mental health centers across the country because they heard voices. They volunteered. Seven were diagnosed as schizophrenics, and one was manic depressive. One was incarcerated. They convinced psychiatrists that they had recovered, which were discharged as schizophrenics in remission. I reflected on the people who consult psychiatrists. About one-third are helped. One-third stay at the same, and one-third get better on their own. I decided to get better on my own. During times when I heard the voices, I was out riding my horse, and the voices would tell me that they were going to make my horse stumble, and then he would indeed stumble. Since he was sure-footed and the ring a good working bass, I was reasonably certain that they could reach his nervous system, but I couldn't understand how. It seemed like a direct hit. Unfortunately for me, the only way that Shiloh and I could communicate were through our mutual physical actions, his voice, my voice tones, and eye contact. One day, Miss Burdick was walking from the stable to the house when she received such a blow to her solar plexus that it knocked her to her knees. There was nobody around to see me except from the air. Evidently, I had displeased somebody, or so it seemed to me at the time. I looked ribbing from the voices as I walked between the house and the stable. They would count in cadence to my stride as I marched in my boots. Looking back on it, I find it hard to describe my many emotional states. I didn't believe in spirits. I believed in men and their ability to cause harm. It seemed as though someone was out to get me, and I thought I knew why. I was thinking in terms of the horse trainer's personal vanity and the locale as a government security situation. I knew the accelerator was valuable and the most powerful in the world. Seemingly, it was wide open to the public and almost anybody could go in there. Yet, it must have been some type of protection. The United States simply couldn't afford to have it unprotected. The only people that could be seen were so-called roundsmen, who were students patrolling on their motorbikes. Yet, right next to the door was a source of particle beams and many other necessary weapons of research. There was nothing consistent in the approach to my person or any pattern of events that we could identify. The main purpose at which they were succeeding seemed to be upset me emotionally and throw me off balance continuously. I felt like I was being through a course of directed thinking. I never had an opportunity to have a blank mind, and I have not since. I was never alone in my mind. I tried to be objective about myself, but I realized that I was subjectively involved. There was no way that I could get inside or outside the situation to defuse it. I took every stimulus as it came, becoming increasingly apprehensive. I rode on sand in the ring and trod on emotional sand out of the ring. It was heavy. The information I could find indicated the visual capability of computers was limited. In the 1980s, there was a machine called FOCUS, Flexible Optical Control Unit Simulator, which projects hallucinatory images directly into the retina of the eye. I felt that I was being seen by human eyes because of the quality of the personal remarks I received during previously private routines. It seems as though my own thoughts were bounced back to me, randomly using different pitches of the same voice. I read that some efforts had been made to simplify visual images into primal sketch to cut out data processing, and that visual mapping techniques had been applied to auditory, olfactory, tactile, and probably emotional states as well. The brain was referred to as an information sink, and the vocal cords as transmitting signals. Machine voices transmitting signals could be received by human sensory organs. Burdock was not the first book to describe such experiences, and in trying to understand what was happening to her, she may have inevitably anthropomorphized her experiences, trying to explain them in terms of known technology. In physics and biophysics, every feedback system became a servo system. In education, the hundreds were making flowcharts. No human activity was unaffected by the applications of computeries. I was aware that every computer, robot, or communication system had to have a human mind programming and making it operate. I knew that completed programs could be automatic and self-correcting. An example is the psychiatrist who invented Perry, a man who bet heavily on horses and was stalked by a vengeful bookie. Psychiatrist at a terminal receiving the program could not decide whether they were interviewing Perry or a live paranoid patient. Quote, "At times I was overwhelmed by feelings of not being able to cope with the information explosion, especially under the circumstances in which I was living. I felt that the machines taking me over were directed by some evil human enterprise. At a sophisticated level, programmers have been advanced mathematicians, physicists, electrical engineers. They have been joined by psychiatrists and psychological fraternities. The best academic thinking seems to be that human intelligence is tied to human perception. Computers have been responsible for improved medicine and rehabilitation, but they have been developed in universities and think tanks with government money supplied by the taxpayers. The results are often classified. Machines are tireless, unlimited by a nervous system or emotion. I did not like what I could feel emotionally, sense physically, and understand intellectually. I felt both played upon and outplayed. The whole environment was both personal and terribly impersonal. I had nobody I could talk to except myself, and I was not sure that I was in any condition to take on the job of both internal and external listener and judge. I was demoralized, confused, and received too many inputs which were activating too many memories. I could not even sort my information effectively. It was like I was a sorcerer's apprentice sweeping faster and faster to stem the tide. I was no computer which could switch through its vast memory to separate accuracy from error. I was a human being lost in a mishmash of emotion, imagination, grasping for voices, kept telling me, "You're programmed, you're programmed, you're programmed yourself. We're programming you." When I put myself to the task of sorting it out, they told me, "You're fucking your head off." Like most victims, especially those who were experiencing the mental radio effects in the early 80s, Dorothy did a lot of research trying to figure out what was happening to her. Quote, "Mail and phone calls coming into or going out of the U.S. states are screened by computer. Until 1976, the government consistently denied intercepting private communications of American citizens. The National Security Agency admitted that this was the purpose of Operation Shamrock and a Senate Select Committee hearings chaired by Frank Church in the aftermath of Watergate. Operation Shamrock's immediate purpose was to uncover foreign involvement in the anti-war movement occurring in the United States, but this also caused domestic surveillance. National Security Agency headquarters at Fort Meade, Maryland, are larger than the CIA and more modern than the Pentagon, whose computers work with difficulty. NSA has the most powerful computers in the world. Its annual budget is estimated in excess of $1.5 billion. Nobody is sure what they spend. Recent declassified documents confirm the National Security Agency's long period of monitoring all forms of communications around the world, including cell phones and computers. Not exempt from NSA's electronic surveillance were the American people. The program that surfaced in 1999 was codenamed Echelon. In the late 1970s, of course, it was still a protected state secret of which Burdick had no knowledge. Quote, "Senate Select Committee hearings brought out the fact that the NSA has the capacity to monitor domestic telephone traffic. The bulk of interception and acquisition of information sent by citizens is being done by the intelligence community at selected points in long lines of telecommunication systems in this country and around the world. My husband had been using phone and telex communication for many years. At a later date, a woman friend would ask me if my husband had perhaps involved me in the harassment I was suffering. In my ignorance, I denied it, but I have to come to see that she's wiser than I. Her husband had been involved in RAND, a government think tank. One of the things EM-targeted individuals are frustrated with is trying to answer the question, why am I targeted? One of the survivors brought this out in the documentary interview we did with him. He said, it's pointless to try and figure it out. It's where everybody goes wrong. Perhaps one is targeted because they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. You can't figure out why they chose you. But Dorothy, writing at this early date, could not help but try to identify her mind watchers. Quote, they seem to be reading over my shoulder. I thought they might be using a new technological toy, powerful ocular vision, or even periscope vision. I was positive that I was rereading what was being read by others concurrently. I was jumpy, but not really frightened. The voices did not follow me to Foothill, a school at which Dorothy lectured. I was nervous enough facing a class of adults without being heckled by some unknown agency while I was spouting forth on nutrition. As I tried to concentrate on my notes and illustrate on the blackboard, an insidious male voice had no trouble penetrating the ear that was nearest to the open doorway. I grasped the lectern securely and gazed into the eyes of my students and desperately tried to concentrate on what I wanted to tell them. As a last resort, I asked them if there were any questions. They rescued me. In the give and take with the class, I could almost forget that an unknown voice unheard by the class was making indecent suggestions or commenting on my performance in less than complimentary terms. To my great relief, class was finally over. The students even came up and asked some questions. They seemed to think that everything was normal. I was angry and militantly decided to try and make a call to the San Mateo Police Department from campus. I used an outdoor booth and then realized that I could be heard by someone outdoors. I went into an office and asked to use their phone. When I reached the police department, they wanted to know what I was calling about, and I told them I was being harassed. The woman who took the call seemed excited and gave me a Woodside number to call when she discovered I was a resident in that town. I did not write it down because I was suddenly horrified to realize by their comments that my tormentors were listening to me even indoors on campus. This was a new and terrifying idea to me, because although I could accept the fact that the house was bugged and that my car was bugged, it had not until this point occurred to me that I could be reached anywhere, the action and the emotional tension. I left the office and still had the presence of mind to walk around with the central part of the campus looking for a van that might contain radio equipment. There was such a truck there, but it was closed and I couldn't see into it. The voice that bugged me during these lectures always came out from one side or over the head. I'd become accustomed to the fact that at home I was living in a goldfish bowl, and that anyone could early guess my location from the sounds that issued from the house. I thought an eavesdropper might account for my discomfort, and I knew that there were some of that were powerful enough to pick up the sound over a mile or so. What puzzled me was whether they actually could see me or how much. I'd also considered the whole problem from the point of view of heat sensitivity. Knowing full well that at nocturnal temperatures below 98 degrees, I would be warmer than any surface in the house, and that I could be visible to the infrared beam. Recently, I watched a popular TV program in which people reported receiving phone calls from the dead. How easy it would be for government jokesters using satellite communications to ring their phones and using previously recorded voice prints, manufacture voices to make them think they were talking to the dear departed. How macabre. That's so sadly how possible. The only question the performance raised in my mind was whether this part of the real government program of disinformation or whether it was just the bored actions of some government surveillance team amusing themselves. I wrote my brother, a retired naval officer with whom I thought I quite knowledgeable in the fields of advanced math and physics. I needed somebody to talk to who wasn't emotionally involved, and I was convinced that there was some kind of surveillance equipment being used, left over or stolen from Vietnam or something. Her brother wrote back, her saying, "There were a number of very interesting devices developed in the Vietnam War. Of course, I'm not cleared for gossip at this point, so I don't know any of the details. The business I've seen at night has been around for a long time in the form of sniper scope, some of which have found their way into the surplus. It depends upon an infrared beam. It was refined sufficiently in Vietnam so that it was like watching people in broad daylight. The types of electronic devices you mentioned are known to exist and have something been monitored in the press without any details. I am not sure, but I believe that the operation of some of that stuff is illegal. It sounds like somebody who has access to military or law enforcement type of equipment. What I'm saying is that the devices do exist. What I'm also saying is that not very many people have access to more refined ones." In another letter, her brother offered suggestions we have heard over and over as part of the EM targeted folklore. "The next time you hear your friends wrap your head in aluminum foil, if it is being carried by ultra-high frequencies, the aluminum foil will shield it out. But if you get no distinct decrease or in volume, then you must consider another source. You can even use aluminum foil as a direct finder. If you get positive result, put a piece of aluminum foil in a rack about 3 or 4 feet. Then when you hear your friends, hold it alongside your head and rotate. The position of minimum volume indicates the direction of the source. This gives you the ability to triangulate. If the source should be fixed, you could drive around in a car and eventually pin the location down pretty well. I don't think the apparent auroral effects as to direction have much significance if UHS is the source. Of course, you would probably have to have a driver while you're swinging your aluminum kite around. If the above gives positive results, then it may be well time to obtain a field strength meter which operates in the gigahertz range and will detect field strength of 1 microvolt per centimeter and doesn't cost too much. The meter will give you a rough estimate on distance with some practice. You will be able to do things like locate places where it was weakest and thereby giving you an opportunity to avoid the nuisance. If you can do both, of the above suggested procedures and demonstrate records thereof, then chances are that somebody will start to listen to you with what you have to say. I think that the go, no-go bit is important. If you can go to some clown, regardless of status, and tell them, look, I can shield this stuff out, then all legitimate muttering concerning psychiatrists and psychologists will cease. UHF will tend to have some cornering effect. You will have to manufacture a tin suit to wear, complete with helmet. However, the simple use of foil about the head or even putting a bucket on your head would cause a detectable change. Burdick said her brother's letters were daylight and darkness to her. Typical to what others I've interviewed day, Burdick reported. I've never been so alone or depressed in my life. At first, I assured my husband that I had a great time in Pullman. It seemed easier than telling him the truth. I was exhausted. Early in May 1978, I asked my brother what might have been the potential of the X-ray and periscope because I seemed to be visible, whether in darkness or light, or visible when theoretically I should be able to have outside eyes. I explained that I was moving targets, that it would be a little like being in the zoo while being one of the animals. I told him that I thought the point of the whole thing was to make me think that I was Joan of Arc and hearing voices. I wrote, this is no simple matter. Whomever is using a device which transmits sound in two directions, and is probably very small and portable, it can be aimed at an individual so that the person targeted can hear the sound, but never near them. It's either part of a rod or something in conjunction with extremely extensive, powerful optics. It may also have a heat sensor and be used at night because they follow me in the dark. It's also powerful. The voices can be heard from all over the house, and it can be surmised with what we are doing. Or very possibly it is only an eavesdropping device, but it's definitely two-way. It seems to have a bent angle optical capability. It's very possibly may have been borrowed from stolen, or she lives next door to Palo Alto, the linear accelerator. I also wrote that it occurred to me that someone on security at the university or the accelerator might be playing a practical joke. And it included the information that all our telephone conversations were heard. I told him that the equipment involved seemed to be something more that you could buy at a local radio supply house. I had found a report in the paper about a bizarre CIA weapons proposal. It recounted the CIA's search for offbeat weapons designed to stun enemy agents into submission with electric shock. An electronic net sending 5 shocks a second into the arms of an enemy agent could cause pain, but not kill healthy people. In electrically sensitive people, a fatal heart attack might occur. The article did not tell whether animal tests took place. I had the feeling that they might have done a little work on this at the university. Everything I could put together kept leading me right back to Silicon Valley and that great national resource, the All-American University. While I was packing for my trip, I got suggestions from the voices about what to take, what to leave out, what toilet articles to include, and general razzing. They always seemed to be able to tell what I was doing. In the shower, I was blitzed by their comments, generally insulted and in quality, the kind that the American Legion uses at conventions when they go out on the street slightly smashed and goose girls with electronic probes. I did not discuss this with my husband. If he couldn't believe the voices, he could hardly be expected to believe in long-distance ray guns. My husband drove me to the airport. We had voice company all the way to the San Francisco airport terminal through my husband was unaware of it. I thought to myself, they must be doing this by the car. I just have to last to the airport. Thank God they can't follow me and follow the plane. Short time after I was settled in my seat, I became aware that they seemed to be sitting behind me towards the rear. I thought they might be playing a tape with added sound effects of ice tinking and glasses at the usual air travel departure voices. The male voice and the girl's voice were discussing me in none other complimentary terms. I bet she thought she was going to get away from us at the airport, he said. Then we have a surprise for her, he continued. There she is trying to act natural and relax. Too bad, Dorothy, too sad, Dorothy. You weren't going to get away with a thing. I thought this must be costing someone quite a good deal of money. They followed me successfully through the hall to the bathroom and goosed me thoroughly in the shower. They razzled me while going to the John and touched me here and there with light shocks. While cleaning my teeth, I got shot bending over and my teeth and the head ached. I felt as though I was in place with my clothes off or in a shooting gallery with no place to hide. I steeled myself to go back to the bedroom. I knew their stun gun couldn't inflict pain. I'd watch them work on the dog, who would yelp and run away, biting his behind and looking to see what stung him. They worked me over from stem to stern. My body muscles seemed to cramp one by one. The sensation started as a tingling and increased in intensity to painful spasm. The more they applied what seemed to be higher voltage, the more cramping, and stopped for a minute or two. The muscles developed, and I couldn't even relax. I turned my back, thinking I could last protect my visceral skeleton. They worked on every angle on my back until I was tense with pain. I got up and walked around. I lay on my back. I felt hot and broke out in a sweat. I could feel my blood pressure going up. My heart pounded, and I knew they were going to kill me. At one point, they worked around my head, and a female said, "You've got to give me a headache now. I'll give you a headache." They left my head and sex organs alone, quite happy with their stimulation of my muscles and circulatory system. At one point, they had the mattress on the floor, thinking that they wouldn't be able to shoot me up and do it so easily, or down in the parking lot, because I could hear people walking back and forth, and the voices seemed to be coming from there. All the time, there was a constant barrage of voices. "Let her have it. You think you're so tough? How's that?" Like most people I've spoken with in this condition, Dorothy was driven to take action. Where does one turn? To law enforcement authorities? She had already been laughed at by the locals, so she tried the FBI. I dialed the FBI's office in Seattle, and a very straight-up, square-type Washingtonian answered. I found I was going to have trouble from then on, both speaking and thinking coherently, because my tormentors began numbing my brain. It was a distinct numbness on the side of my forehead nearest the windows. I had difficulty giving my name and location. My speech, with minutes before it had been clear, was slurred. I examined that. I thought someone was using classified equipment that had been carried over state lines to harassment, and that the nature of the equipment was such that it raised my blood pressure, caused my heart to pound, and gave me cramps in my muscles. The agent who answered told me that he knew of no equipment that could do any of these things, and that I really ought to see a psychiatrist. I did ask him if there was an FBI man in Pullman I could talk to, and he assured me that nobody would talk to me at all. I hung up the phone, feeling beat. Later, I found out the radio waves are electromagnetic energy emanating from one little black box at 388 megacycles causes the recipient to become confused and lose his memory. Prolonged exposure may produce insanity. At the time, I had not grasped the idea that the same principle is easily adapted to space technology. I was thinking in terms of local events and people I had seen and a protective government. The whole project seemed designed to keep me earthbound. After some incidents in the yard and increasingly feeling of being rather interesting mouse being teased to death by a cat, I had difficulty accepting the idea that my mind could be read or thoughts anticipated. The whole concept of one's mind being read is hard to believe while it's going on. It's a little like having someone constantly looking over your shoulder. The first reaction is to reject the idea and tell yourself you're imagining things. Then I begin to think of ways in which I was about to say might be picked up by machines, but I tend to articulate thoughts and aspirate before I speak what I'm going to say. Perhaps most people do this, as I considered how many thoughts might be picked up before I uttered them. I realized that I moved my throat, my tongue, my glottis, inspiring, almost forming the words with my mouth and throat before I speak them. I really struggled to overcome this for a while, while I finally came to the conclusion that although all the muscles formed my head down to my vocal cords were still, what I was thinking consciously was being picked up in some way. This was about the end of April 1978. In her notes, Dorothy describes some of the most common experiences of an EM target. I've been fed bad language, obscene suggestions, and alternatively fed a line and had it withdrawn. This is part of brainwashing techniques, altering a feeling of love with hate or feelings of security with insecurity. The most popular diagnosis of my mental state would have been paranoid schizophrenic. The manic state coincided with pleasurable conditioning and the depressive state, the pain, pressure, and harassment. I realized that very few people would believe me because, one, they won't believe it possible. Two, they prefer not to believe it. Three, they do not know that such technical instrumentation is available. Capabilities can be aimed from a great distance accurately. Provides incredible X-ray or sonar location in the house. Has stun gun effect, which slows thought and speech. It raises the pulse rate, blood pressure, can produce palpitations, heal, and seems to stimulate vagina, clitoris, and possibly mental pleasure centers in the brain as well. Can also cause muscle tension and pain. Another entry noted that she believed that she and her husband had been targeted of a very sensitive listening equipment, he continued noting. We have been subjected to subliminal conditioning by someone who has used it before, probably in the military. One could be said to be conditioned for exhibitionist sex due to the fact that I can tell comments that my husband and I are being watched.